The recording's having started. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Glenn or Gisela, would you mind doing the roll call?
Absolutely not. Good morning, good afternoon to everyone on today's RAP call on Monday, the 19th of April. We have Greg Aaron, James Bladle, Rob Hutchinson, Faisal Shah, Mikey O'Connor, Barry Cobb, Martin Sutton. We have from staff Marika Koning, Margie Milam, Glenda Saint-Géry, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. I do not have any apologies noted. If I can please remind everyone just to state their names before speaking. Thank you. Over to you, Greg.
Okay. Thank you very much. And let's go ahead and get started where we dropped last time, which was we're in the summary of public comments that Marika had written. And we left off with malicious uses of domain names, which is on page 5. And this is one of the unanimously accepted recommendations. We do have some public comments. Basically, summary of the registry constituency group is that supports a recommendation for various reasons, for positive reasons, and then feels that the issues to address illicit or criminal use of domain names are outside of scope. George Kiriko thinks it's out of scope as well. EN supports the recommendation, but opposes attempts to make it mandatory. Cadness supports the alternate view, thinks the recommendation is too soft. ICA supports the practices. CBUC supports. So those are the comments. As always, what we're going to do is we'll just run through these summaries, and then we will continue to look at the individual comments in more depth. Any comments on that summary? If not, we'll move on to who is Access, which was supported by the registry constituency. George Kirikos noted that verified who is in his opinion, the real solution. But I'm going to have to note that who is accuracy is not a topic for this group, so he's commenting on something I think is off topic. He notes that some registrars don't provide 14.3 access. So that is on topic. BN says the current system requirements for registrars to give everyone access needs to be revised to take into consideration such abuse's negative impact on registrants, and says that many registrars either do not have functioning WHOIS servers or block access in such a manner as to give the impression that the server does not exist. Kind of supports the recommendations. ICA supports additional research and processes to ensure that WHOIS data is accessible. Urges a focus on fraudulent registrations that may be associated with domain theft. That's off topic, isn't it? James?
Hi, Greg. James speaking. And if you could just help me refresh my memory, do we make note of some of the challenge or operational differences between thick and thin registries when we talk about who is accessibility?
There is a note in the report that rate limiting, for example, can be a valid practice.
Thank you. That was exactly what I was going towards. If we've already mentioned it, then I'll withdraw my question. I just didn't want to trust my memory.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Marika, I have a procedural question. Some of these comments we're seeing here are off topic because they're about who is accuracy. Should those comments be stricken from the summary as non-relevant?
This is Marika. I don't think it needs to be stricken here because the summary normally summarizes what people's views are. I think that in the discussions we're having now, the group can just know that you know they're not relevant in relation to the report. I don't think they necessarily need to be stricken here in the summary.
Okay. All right. Continuing on, the IPC proposes an alternate recommendation for PDP to investigate the connection, if any, between privacy and our proxy servers and registration abuse. I mean, I'll just say that that's off topic. And two, they wanted a PDP to investigate the possibility of best practices for privacy and proxy services and the accreditation of those. So, again, that seems outside the scope that this group is engaged in. Any disagreements? And the CBC supported the recommendations. So that's it on who is. Any additional thoughts on that summary on who is? Okay. Next section. Oh, James posted a note. Did you want to say something, James?
No. I just think that we were getting cross-pollinization of the who is topic with another comment that was open about the same time. So,
okay.
Just making note that the public comment calendars were in collision there, so that's why we're receiving some of those comments about who is accuracy.
Okay. Uniformity of contracts. The registry stakeholder groups. But by the way, Marika, just as a question, if a commenter didn't comment on a topic, then we wouldn't see anything here. Is that correct?
This is Marika. Yes, I think for most of the issues where they didn't provide any input. I didn't specifically mention, like, person X didn't provide any input. It's just not there.
Okay, got it. Okay, thank you. Okay, uniformity of contracts. The registry stakeholder group said that the GNSO should be skeptical of the proposed PDP. It would pursue an unidentified problem and urges rejection of the recommendation. GD, I think, is GoDaddy. Says that requiring uniformity in registering registrar agreements would have negative impacts on innovation, competition, and the problem of abuse itself. Provided some comments on that, which we'll read through later. George Curico said that this appears to be another attempt to compel creation of abuse policies in every agreement that goes far above common legal standards. And, quote, most abuse happens due to anonymity and throwaway domains by cyber criminals. Hence need for verified who is. CADNET supports the recommendation. The registrar stakeholder group opposes creation of an issues report. And says all registrars and registrants are already contractually obligated to abide by ICANN policies, notably existing or new consensus policies. The PDP being a mechanism specifically designed to create uniformity where it is needed. Instead, the registrar stakeholder group supports consideration of possible abuse contact best practices. BBUC supports UA. Noting that this recommendation shows strong support among the group. So anything on uniformity of contracts? Okay, if not, we have uniformity of reporting, and George Kirikos adds some notes about XML documents and APIs. the reporting and reuse of data can be simplified. Okay, so that's more operational perhaps. BN highlights the need for standardization and simplification of abuse reports. CADNET supports recommendations. CBUC supports. And that's it. Collection of best practices. George expressed his concern in relation to the funding requirement. He says that ICANN needs to be focused on a narrow technical role instead of engaging in mission creep. CADNA supports the recommendation. COA supports the general recommendation that ICANN should do more to promote best practice development and dissemination, including structured funded mechanisms for the collection and maintenance of best practices. CBUC supports the recommendation. And that brings us to the end of the summary. So any comments on that?
Hi, Greg. This is Barry.
Go ahead.
I think maybe that last section that says collection of best practices, I'm sorry, never mind. Strike that. Thank you.
All right. Okay. Well, what we're going to do next then is now we've got the lay of the land, so to speak. We're going to go to the public comments in depth. And our goal here is to then decide if we have to change anything in the report. So that, of course, includes any factual corrections. If there is some comment that was notable, what we can do is note that in the given section. For example, if we're talking about uniformity of contracts and we want to say something about the public comments, we can insert it in that section. And, of course, then generally sharpen material in the paper. We can highlight things, change them, what have you, based upon the comments. One thing we will need to do at this point is, again, Marika is going to need to be the tracker of any changes. So, Marika, at this point, I guess we would be operating off of the draft that we sent to the council. That is the latest, as far as I know. We haven't made any changes yet.
Yes, that's correct.
Now, also,
false February.
Yeah, and then also we had some people working on some text, and maybe we should look at those now before we dive into individual comments. And the action items were as follows: we had one change to the summary and analysis was. Which Marika had taken care of. In general, we're going to call out the issue regarding use versus registration issues. We're going to work on that probably over the coming weeks, especially as we digest additional comments. We're going to work on the cyber squatting section a bit. As we work through comments, and then Martin and Barry were working on text about slamming. Barry and Martin, would you like the floor to talk about that? You sent some material up to the list.
Yeah, hi, this is Barry. Just basically, I tried to model this section for fake renewal notices. Into the slamming, tried, you know, kind of providing the issue definition, a bit of the background and a recommendation. The recommendation was basically to kind of modeling off of the fake renewal notices. I think how we had the fake renewal notices structured is that if we would kick this over to compliance, if compliance couldn't do anything, then perhaps we would look at forming a PDP around that. My intent with regard to slamming was kind of try to do the same nature. Since they're both closely alike, I thought that it would be good if there was any kind of PDP for the fake renewal notices that we could incorporate maybe any work and effort to better understand the slamming issue. So I think James had responded back, stating that there was probably not any wiggle room for us to do a formal PDP, as most of these issues are related to country code domains and that kind of stuff. And I guess I would agree, which is unfortunate, because that's certainly where other abuses are going on. But regardless, I think if, somewhere we need to, in terms of even coming up with just the recommendation of creating education and awareness about this issue, where does that work actually get done? And so originally I went kind of the extreme right, let's include this into a PDP with the fake renewal notices and hopefully get the work done. If not, then we can go, tone it down and find the appropriate recommendation.
Martin? Thank you, Barry. Martin?
Hi, yeah, thanks, Barry, and thanks for letting me off lightly on here, because you kindly did all the work on this one. So I just wanted to pick up on one point. I know James has mentioned that the effect of slamming is probably far more related to CCTLDs currently, but I was looking at this slightly differently. It's who's orchestrating this and whether there is enough evidence collected, which I doubt, but whether there's enough evidence collected, whether it's accredited registrars or simply just resellers. So I still think we've probably got to do a fair bit of research behind this before we can just discount it on the basis that it's largely focused on CCTLDs. I kind of look at these as well. There was another comment about the fact that, UDRP could support any issues relating to slamming if it was rolled out into the GTLD world. When you look at the slamming as it's defined here, it's more of a pre-registration scam versus the post-registration scam that you see with the fake renewal notices. So I think there's a slight difference here. What can we do to prevent this in the first place? And I think that's where we were heading towards more of an education piece, maybe a suitable approach. But first and foremost, is what evidence have we got, and how can we pull that together is one of the things that I think needs to be looked at. And I think that's why Barry's quite rightly put in here looking at an issues report to investigate it further.
Okay. Thank you, Martin. This is Greg. I'm going to go because I raised my hand, and then we'll go to Mike and James. One of my questions is about terminology. What we're talking about is a notice that someone receives, and it says that someone is trying to register your string or a string you're interested in another TLD. So we want to give you the opportunity to register that before we register for the other person. Is that correct? Because I've gotten notices like that before myself.
Yes, correct. Basically, you're getting an email notice. If I've misstated it here, again, this is the first draft, and I welcome any edits to improve the definition or better shape the issue description here. I did this at the 11th hour last night. So,
okay. My observation is that the term slamming might not be the best one. In the United States, slamming is the term used when a subscriber's telephone or internet service is changed without their consent, for example, from one carrier to another. So that's the way the term is in use, at least here. It's more akin to an unauthorized domain transfer or something like that, I guess. We might need to come up with a new term. Okay, so then then why don't we go to James next, and then Mikey.
Hi, Greg. Thanks. James speaking. And I thought that I wanted to thank Barry and Martin for putting that together on the list last night. They just had some thoughts, and I sent them back. But in general, my thinking was that what we're really talking about here is when I posted in the chat room, some sort of a pre-cyber squatting or a threat of cyber squatting. And I think where I was getting going with the UDRP was that, you know, you could respond with a threat of cyber squatting with a response would be a threat of a UDRP. If the name is actually registered, then the UDRP could proceed in reality. And to Martin's point, the second thought was that we should probably understand, is there something about the nature of registrars or resellers that give them the exclusivity to perpetrate such a scam, or is this really just open to internet users at large? I suspect it's the latter, but we can take a look at that as well. And then the question was, since this is primarily affecting, as we discussed, at least partially or mostly ccTLDs, is there a process or precedent for a GNSO PDP to make recommendations to the CCNSO to examine an issue, to raise an issue report under their procedures? How does that work, or is it just, we send something over to them and they thank us and it's dead? I'm really kind of curious as if there's any sort of mechanism to pass information between the CCNSO and the GNSO.
That's an interesting question, and we have several people on the call who can probably help us with that. There's Margie and Marika, and also Wendy Seltzer is on the call as well. Does staff have any ideas about James's question?
This is Marika. I'm not aware of any examples where the GNSO has recommended the CCNSO to initiate a PDP and they've done it. I know that there have been instances, for example, the FastFlux working group where, we've asked for their participation or to look at the issue. So I think it probably would be the latter, that, the GNSO can pass something on and it's up to the CCNSO then to decide what can be done with it. And it, of course, would need to follow as well their specific procedures to actually see whether, they could launch a PDP on it or not.
Can I get in the queue? It's Margie. I'm actually not on the Adobe Connect right now.
Go ahead.
Okay. When we did the restructuring of the GNSO, we've got two different voting thresholds, one for PDP recommendations that are within scope and another that for PDP recommendations that are outside of scope. And it strikes me that this is the kind of thing that would fall in that other category, where we're just making a suggestion to the GNSO, to the CCNSO, and it looks like, at least under our voting thresholds, that contemplated that you could do that.
Okay. Well, and if it was a recommendation, it wouldn't even be a PDP request. It would just be more of like a, would it be more of a courtesy thing? The
yeah,
GNSO says, hey, here's something you might want to think about, and hands it off. Mikey, I think you're next in the queue.
Thanks, Greg. I took my hand down because James pretty much hit all the points I was going to raise.
Okay, thank you. Barry, I see your hand.
Yes, just a couple of responses. And Martin, thank you for the other vantage point of, looking at it from the perspective that it could potentially be resellers and or accredited registrars and that we need to find more information. I guess The other lens by which we should be looking at this is the new GTLDs, and I could certainly see how this type of scam could propagate maybe perhaps more predominantly in the generic space. I mean, speculation at this point because we don't really see much of it today, but we, you know, possibly could tomorrow. The other point that I would like to mention in reference to the cyber squatting comment by James, at least from my perspective and the few examples that I've seen or that I've gotten, certainly they go beyond any trademark kind of purposes. In fact, all the examples that I've seen is the registrant actually owns multiple domains in .com, .org, and .net, and that seems to be a bigger target than those that just maybe have a .com. But nonetheless, in terms of like trying to battle it from a UDRP perspective, I don't know where we would get with it if we never actually register the domains, because typically what I think what happens is that, at least from what Rod had mentioned, the domains never really get registered if you just kind of ignore it over time, which is most likely the case. But two, do we have, if they were to get registered, which is probably pretty slim, because the original registrant of the domains in the .com, .org didn't have a trademark, do they still have ground to stand on, so to speak? And I guess that's really just a question. Thank you.
Thank you, Barry. This is Greg. I have a good question.
Greg, if I could respond real quick.
Go ahead, James.
Thanks, Greg. Yeah, and Barry, I think you hit on a really important point there at the end of your comment, is that if I have the same string in .com/.net and .org and it's not a registered trademark, does that presume any rights in other TLDs? Either first right of refusal or the right to block someone else or something like that. And I think that that's something we should be very mindful and careful of, because I would think that if one wanted to extend a claim on a string, that should be a registered mark in some jurisdiction. So I just wanted to put that out there, that the reverse of this would be that you get a string in .com/.net and .org, and then suddenly you are infused with rights outside of that.
Okay.
And it's just maybe a side effect of a first come first serve environment, that folks would assume that they should be able to get conflicting strings.
Okay. Thank you, James. This is Greg. I have a scope question. We started off by talking about these problematic transfer issues. That's how this came up. And the issue there was somebody was representing themselves as the registrar when in fact they were not, as part of the fake renewal notice. But that's with an existing domain name with an existing sponsor. The issue here is domain names that don't even exist yet. And maybe we could all agree that it's certainly a slimy practice to try to mislead people. But is there an ICANN or a GNSO issue here yet? And is this something that ICANN should be involved in, the pre-creation of domains that don't exist yet? Or, is this more of a consumer protection issue? What are your thoughts on that?
This is Wendy. I just wanted to, I had put my hand up just to add a note into our earlier discussion that the existence and protection of common law trademarks sometimes muddies the issue a bit, in that if you can demonstrate common law rights to a string, even if you haven't registered it as a trademark, you may be able to kick someone out using the UDRP. That still doesn't mean that you necessarily have rights if you receive one of these someone's trying to register your name, you might be in the position that, in fact, you could use the UDRP to kick them out if they register, or you might be in the position of having no superior rights and just either you register it and you take it or you don't and somebody else does or doesn't. So I guess I'd agree with the general sentiment that this is a perhaps deceptive practice of those sending the notices around, but not clear that it's something that ICANN needs to do something about.
Okay. Thank you, Wendy. We've got Vic, Barry, and so let's go to Mikey and then Barry.
Thanks, Greg. This is Mikey. I'm on the fence on this one. I can see the point that Barry's making in this, but I also see the point that several interesting puzzlers. One is that in many, you know, we're about registration abuse. In many cases, these names haven't been registered and probably never will. You know, it's language that's being used to scare somebody into registering a name. So that's a puzzler. The other is that on the fake renewal notices thing, at the core of that, in some place in that pile, there's always a registrar. And in this one, there isn't necessarily a registrar. I mean, anybody could set up shop to do this unless... but I guess if they're doing this notice, it seems like there maybe does have to be a registrar involved because otherwise they wouldn't get any money.
The party sending these notices out is almost always a reseller, I think. So
yeah.
Behind that is a registrar somehow, which may or may not be aware of what's going on.
Well, that swings me towards Barry's view, which is that if there's an ICANN contracted party involved, reseller or registrar, then they're doing this thing in order to essentially defraud people. Then I think that there is a case to have ICANN at least take a look at it. This one is, at least for me, is well in the gray area. And I don't really know where I sit yet.
Okay. Thank you, Mikey. Barry?
Thank you, Greg. This is Barry. Yeah, just in reference to your scope question, like Mikey said, I in some respects I can be on the fence with this, and I don't mean this to sound as a vendetta, but I think I do have... the unique perspective of being fairly new to this industry, although that excuse is getting old here pretty quick, I got scammed by this. So the examples I provided with ballotportal.com back in 2008, which is within my first year of experience in the domaining world, I saw this come across, and having, you know, very little knowledge about cyber squatting and how brands were protecting their marks across several TLDs and that kind of stuff, I was like, oh my God, the bells went off, and I'm like, well, I should go register these. Now, fortunately, I wasn't naive enough to try to go through the party that sent me the notice. I went through my own accredited registrar that I trusted and secured those names for the normal registration price. You know, I held on to them for a year, and then when my streak IQ has improved over that time frame, I just let those expire because they weren't doing anything for me. But funny enough is, basically a year after that, in 2010, I get the exact same notice. So in terms of the scope, it does become in scope if the registrant does register those domains by whatever method that they do. So, you know, again, it's, I don't know that we'd ever be able to put a price tag on this, but again, how I know that it's a prevalent issue is I've had several of my close friends that are completely clueless about this industry ask me what they were going to do, and most of them had said, oh, my God, I was even going to go through that notice person to try to register those names, as opposed to going through a GoDaddy or Enom, a truly respected market participant. So that's just my comment about the scope aspect of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see. We have Martin, and then Wendy, and then James, I think. Let's try that.
Okay, cheers, Greg. It's Martin. I think we're still struggling because of the scale and who's actually the players involved in this. I've just gone through an example. I received these by the day, either via other parties around the group or directly. I've got one here which is flagging up a list of domains in different CCTLDs. There's .Asia and a number of other CCTLDs related to Asia listed for, do you want first option on this because somebody else is going to register it otherwise. Now, I've just gone through to the website on this particular organization that sent the email. It's some called DS Network Solutions Limited. If you look on About Us, then they say they're partners with and list a whole load of NICs that they're supposedly associated with. So it kind of tries to add some validity, or it could be running a perfectly legitimate business on the side of this, but also some dubious marketing scams on the side. But where do you go? I think this is the issue, is that there are loads of these. We don't know the volumes of it because most people either ignore it or they get duped into registering them, and that's it. Nothing else happens. So I still think that we're scrabbling around here, but probably need to have that element of research to back up one way or the other to what extent the problem is, what are the players involved, and how can we actually address that if we perceive there to be a problem.
Thank you, Martin. If nothing else from Martin, then we move on to, I forget who I said next.
Wendy next.
Let's try Wendy next.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for welcoming me into the group at this point. What I'm hearing here sounds a lot like a simple problem of fraud that's an excellent place to call in sort of national legal systems and something that we don't particularly need ICANN involvement, because as we say in many contexts, ICANN is not a law enforcement body. And this is a good place for people to again go back to fraud, but not, I think, something that ICANN has unique competence in. If they are falsely advertising that a name will be purchased by someone else and that someone else doesn't exist, then it sounds to me like even criminal fraud. But so to me, the best course would be reference to a law enforcement agency and not ICANN.
Okay. Thank you, Wendy. And this is Greg. I'd just add that was the route that was pursued in some of these false transfer cases. There was one entity in particular who did a lot of this in Australia, Canada, and the United States, And I think law enforcement, perhaps in all three cases, in all three countries, did pursue the entity that was doing that, either through law enforcement or a regulatory communications body of some sort. That might be something we should look into.
Yeah, and I say that particularly because it sounds as though many of the people involved in perpetrating the scams are not sort of members of the ICANN contractual system there, when they're resellers who aren't contracted parties. ICANN doesn't have a good handle on flushing those scams out.
Although one thing that's come up in our past conversations, Wendy, which were before your time, was that, well, what's the responsibility that a registrar has for its resellers?
Right.
To me, zero, but I'll go back and rejoin earlier conversations around that.
There's the practical question, and also just whether or not a domain is registered by a reseller matters a great deal practically, but also doesn't matter at all, because the registrar is the party of record that has responsibility for the domain. So the existence of a reseller matters, and also maybe it doesn't, if you see what I'm saying. So anyway, just want to let you know we wrestled with some of those thorny issues. Let's go to Mikey and then James.
I'm sorry. That's an old hand. I'll take it down.
Okay. James?
Hi, Greg. James speaking, and this has been really, I think, fascinating topic of conversation today. I think we're all in agreement that this is a widespread issue. I mean, I've received them myself, and that it's pretty underhanded and pretty slimy. But I think, you know, we need to kind of take a look then further what we need to do about it. And the way I'm just jotting down some notes here, I think I've come up with a way to narrow this this issue or define it a little bit better. It's essentially that there would be three tests. The first one is that whether this is a gTLD versus a ccTLD. Second test, whether or not the name is actually registered or it's just the threat of registering a conflicting name. And the third test being that the perpetrator is an ICANN contracted party versus just some individual or group of individuals out there on the internet doing that. And essentially, I think that you have to hit the three tests exactly right for this to be in scope for ICANN. It has to be a gTLD, it has to be registered, and it has to be involvement of a contracted party. Any failure on those three tests would mean that it suddenly, in my opinion, moves out of scope. And if it hits all three of those, then it starts to look a lot like cyber squatting, and I think we've determined that the UDRP is the best thing we have going right now for something like that. So, but I think this is interesting. I think we could benefit from some more research. I think we've all experienced this as individuals and can share our anecdotes for a while but I think that ultimately we're going to need some more quantitative research on what's going on here.
Okay, thank you, James. Anybody else? Martin, I see your hand up.
Thanks. Yeah, Martin here. Wendy, welcome to the group, and thank you. I love to hear the confidence in law enforcement in these circumstances, but I think I'd be quite confident to say that this would never reach the radar of law enforcement that I'm aware of. This wouldn't go close. I think this actually takes us back to one of the other issues, meta issues, that we had discussions with previously, which is one of those things where nobody really knows where to go to when they receive these for any action to be taken. You either follow it under duress because you think that you might miss out, and you go and register some domains and potentially at extortionate costs, or you ignore it, which is what tends to happen within my organization. But on the scale side of it, CCTLD and GTLDs, you may end up with a lot of approaches which are going to be mixed anyway. They'll have some new GTLDs potentially mixed with some of the CCTLDs. We don't know. But I just think that there is some crossover here with the sort of meta issues that were raised previously with types of incidents where we don't really have a home to go to. In terms of who cares would be another issue. I don't think one way or another registrars or even ICANN are particularly bothered, because it will just be the registrant, whoever picks it up, that will be paying for the domain name and feeding it through. So I think it still goes back to getting some data. I'll call that an end for my piece today.
Thank you. All right. So where are we on this? We need to kind of figure out our next step.
Greg, this is Barry. I'm just trying to bring closure on this. I think I can probably at least get consensus that we modify the recommendation on this, that we send it back to the GNSO Council. We won't call for an official PDP. I'm not sure how we would frame it, either a pre-PDP or something along the lines of, you know, we need to get some sort of group behind this or some sort of body to do the research that we're looking for, and then come back with the results of that and take it from there.
Okay, so Barry, you're proposing that we amend the proposal in the existing paper. Is that correct?
If you want to call it existing paper, I mean, from what I've included here, yes, I can tone down the recommendation that we just send it back for more research, I guess, because we're definitely not going to be able to accomplish it in this pre-PDP here. I mean, I would agree. I don't know that it warrants a full PDP either, but I just don't want this to kind of go to the wayside. Somehow, some way, we need to find a group that would be able to conduct the kind of research and the data gathering that we need to make a more intelligent decision about it.
Okay, other opinions? I see Faisal's hand.
Yeah. I guess I was a couple of things. I guess I'd go back a little bit and say to something you said, Greg, a long time ago in this conversation about this not being slamming. It's really the whole slamming thing came about because of the panics.com incident that we had a few years ago. So maybe that's kind of throwing us off a little bit. But I think it sounds to me like most of this of what's happening here is a result of what's going on with resellers. And maybe the better way to do it, and I can go, I mean, I'm in that gray area too, kind of like where Mike is at. But maybe there's a way of doing this by pushing for best practices for registrars to educate resellers on what they can do or what they can do in connection with this kind of practice. As maybe being another possibility that we can, because it seems like it's, to some extent, I think James is right. I mean, it's coming from some third party that has nothing to do with any contracted party. Well, then, who really cares? If it's coming to the resellers, maybe there's a way of getting to those resellers, or maybe there's a way of being able to educate them as to what they can and what they can't do at this point. I don't know.
I mean, some Google searches turn up some things about the background. I'll send them out to the list. Like I said, sometimes it's going to be resellers like Domain Registry of Canada, who does a lot of those transfer notices. One accredited registrar's name who comes up in some of those complaints is Brandon Gray Internet Services, which is a fully accredited registrar. All right. One way we could go forward is for Barry to provide some suggested language based upon what he suggested today. And does anybody else have any additional ideas? Mikey, I think.
I actually just have a question, and that is the extent to which contract provisions for the registrars flow through to the resellers. And it might be useful to clarify that, either here or somewhere, because I was sort of under the misimpression that a lot of the ICANN contract stuff that was laid on the registrars was also flowing through to resellers.
I actually think that's right. But isn't the reseller the agent? So aren't they bound with the same duties and obligations?
Yeah. Wendy's comment was what sort of perked my interest there. Because if they are not bound to the structure of ICANN contracts, then I think we've tripped over a much more interesting issue that bears on a lot of the other recommendations that we're making. So a little clarification of that would be helpful.
Margie, this is Greg. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
I was wondering if you had any thoughts on that. Mikey's question basically is, are resellers bound to do the things that are in the RAA? I guess that's another way of stating it.
The RAA has some provisions related to the to resellers, but I don't know that it's all of them. I'd have to take a look at them, and I can send something by email or for the next call. So I can clarify that. But my recollection is there's some, but not all.
Would you be willing to just send a note up to the list with some pointers? I mean, because like the RAA says that registrars have to do certain things, like ask their registrants to provide valid WHOIS information and this and that. I mean, I'm assuming that resellers don't have to escrow, for example. That might be most properly done at the registrar. But what responsibilities does a reseller have that flow up or flow down?
Okay, I'll follow up with that on the list.
That'd be great. Thank you. Okay, any other comments or ideas before we leave this topic? I see Faisal's hand and James's hand up. Are those... old hands or new hands?
New.
Okay. James, go ahead.
No, just that I believe that the RAA, at least the latest versions, states fairly clearly that registrars are responsible for the conduct of their resellers ultimately, and that the resellers are not under contract with ICANN, so if any name is attached to a registrar, the registrar has to design their reseller program so that they can govern those sorts of things. That's not a comprehensive opinion, but I think that's just in general the sentiment amongst registrars is that they have to govern their resellers.
This is Mikey. Let me just barge in. Then the question becomes, it seems to me, suppose that one of your resellers is doing fraud, like these folks are. Do you as a registrar, I don't want to put you on the spot, do registrars as a group feel that they have any obligation to stop that? Or is the there's a couple examples tacked on to various email.
I mean, I know that Mikey, our organization, aggressively goes after those types of folks.
I guess the question is there any contract? I mean, I'm not a lawyer and don't even play one on TV, so I'm really bad at this. But if somebody's is somebody's doing fraud under somebody else's wing, and they don't do anything about it, presumably these people in China aren't under GoDaddy's wing. They're under somebody, some other registrar's wing. You know, this is why I'm in the gray area. It seems to me that eventually we do find ourselves back at an ICANN contracted party somehow. And I tend to agree with Martin that I know that if I went to my local law enforcement folks with stuff like this, they'd kind of go, Mikey, I don't know that we care. The amount of money involved is so small. And the harm is not overwhelming. So I'm not sure that it would get them very excited. And yet, if there's some sort of legal chain between a fraud being committed and a contracted party, it seems to me that this is not an unreasonable thing to have ICANN speak about. I'm still very, very on the fence. I really don't know what to do on this one. I like the idea of more data. And I don't like the idea of just shrugging this one off. It just feels like something that I can't ought to have an opinion about.
So this is Wendy, and the law enforcement resources are not limited to sort of call in the local cop. It's also sort of private enforcement of the law through civil lawsuits, and if this is a big enough problem, one of the ways the legal system deals with it is offering up class action opportunities, at least in the U.S. So if somebody saw enough people being defrauded by this means, an enterprising class action lawyer could pick it up and litigate and win most of the penalties for himself and his firm. But that would stop the practice. So it seems to me that there are a lot of other places where it can get resolved without drawing ICANN's regulatory goop into the mix.
Oh, tasty conversation. Worthy of more conversation, I guess, is my bottom line on it.
Okay. Thank you. Any last comments?
Craig, just to solidify the action items basically assigned to me, I'll first action is we'll put out to the list to try to come up with a new term for this. James came up with some creative ones, and we'll try to work from those. And second, I'll look at maybe putting a couple of different proposals for recommendations up. And then when we get to the point of incorporating this into the final report and we go to do our final consensus polling, you know, we can move from there, if that's acceptable. Thank you.
Okay. So, Barry, the action item will be for you to send something out before the next meeting. And also, if you could... We need to get a handle on the right terminology. And slamming may or may not be the best one. I'm Wikipedia-ing the main slamming. There's actually a definition in there. So there may be some pointers in those footnotes about past industry terminology and so forth. Okay.
All right, I'll do some searching.
Okay, we will take that up next time. And then we'll have to make a determination about it. So in the meantime, we're going to move on to the specific comments about the initial report. So what you need to do is go to the public comment board, and I'm going to put that here in the chat box. And what we can do is just take them in chronological order from the first posting to the last. And the first public comment is from WIPO. And it's signed by Eric Wilbers, who is the director of WIPO. And it's dated March 26th. So you can bring that up in your browser. I think we've got it right there. And this is difficult probably to summarize. So if you haven't read it already, please start reading it. In the first part of the letter, Mr. Wilbur said UDRP as a mandatory best practice. Okay, so I have a problem with the terminology right there. It's a policy, not a best practice. He says it continues to limit exposure for registration authorities and ICANN. Any process outcome that destabilizes or compromises the principles and practices of this bedrock mechanism for out-of-court dispute resolution concerning online identifiers would jeopardize this effect. So I think what he's saying there is UDRP is a process that is handled by third parties, and everybody in the chain, ICANN, registries, registrars, registrants, all says that they're going to participate in that process. And by having a neutral dispute provider that exposes liabilities for the registries, registrars, ICANN. So let's read into his letter and see what specifically he says. He says the issue is not whether UDRP can be improved, but rather whether a process of this nature is likely to achieve some results. Realistically, this effort may well end up also incorporating design proposals, facilitating the type of practices that prompted the creation of the UDRP in the first place. I'm not sure exactly what those first couple of sentences mean or how to parse them. Does anybody have any thoughts?
There's a whole bunch of scaremongering going on here.
Okay, Wendy, tell us what you think.
That's my general thought. Sorry.
No, that's all right. Any other thoughts? I've stepped away from my computer for just a second, so I can't see the hands. Just identify yourself if you'd like to speak.
This is Mikey. I tend to agree with Wendy. This is... This seems to be a note from a group of folks who really don't want to see the question of UDRP opened up for discussion, change, review, and that they're trying to head off that part of our recommendation. I think I agree with Wendy. This is pretty over-the-top rhetoric, but I'm not sure I agree with it.
Hey, this is Faisal. I think what I read from this is that what they're saying is that maybe the UDRP really isn't broken. That if you open it up now, maybe you'll end up getting into a worse situation than where you are right now. And potentially, the better way of doing this is to work with what you have right now and the structure you have right now, as opposed to throwing it wide open and letting everybody jump in creating a bigger problem than you have now. To some extent, that's right, but I'm not sure I fully agree, but I can see where they're coming from.
This is Mikey again. I think that the problem that I've got with this is that they've got a huge conflict of interest in that point of view, since they're the one of the three fora for the UDRP.
Yeah, but they also know it better than anyone else.
I'm not sure I'm quite willing to sign up for that. Yeah, I think that there are lots of folks who are. I'm not one of those folks, by the way. I've never done a UDRP of any sort, but there are people who are very engaged in that process who I think have a lot to say about it that are outside.
I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
Okay. This is Wendy with a more serious phrasing of my comment. I read this as a major incumbent provider of UDRP services doesn't want anything done to UDRP services that could displace it or force it to compete with providers on different terms from what it's already very successfully doing. I don't see serious criticisms of what we're doing here that we need to take into account so much as a lot of hand-waving about try to touch this process and you'll set off a chain of dominoes, which I don't think is true.
This is Greg. By the way, there's an upcoming ICANN board meeting on the 22nd, and one of the agenda items is UDRP policy, relationships with service providers, semicolon, changes in procedures. And that's all it says. So I just saw that posted, so I don't know what it means, but it's coming up at the board for some sort of discussion. All right, well, let's continue to read the letter, and let's see what Mr. Wilbur says. He continues, against the backdrop of the recent constellation of embedded ICANN processes, WIPO cautions against any outcome, however well-intentioned in some ways, that would ultimately harm the legitimate interests of trademark owners, as well as ICANN stakeholders. This would also include registrants, who may do well to recall that under the UDRP system, unlike in national courts, monetary damages and legal costs are not awarded to the prevailing complainant. Likewise, on their own level, we believe that registrars and registries have their own interest in UDRP stability. And then in bold type, the basis for including the UDRP in the RAP Working Group initial report, especially against the background of ICANN's new GTLD program, is unclear. Unquote. I'll just say that the basis for including it in our work is very clear, because this is a cyber squatting and registration issue. And what we see here is ICANN now linking this to the new GTLD program, which is a whole other can of worms. He says the link between a report concerning abusive practices undertaken by certain registration authorities on one hand. Okay, that's interesting. Abusive practices undertaken by certain registration authorities. What he's saying is abusive practices undertaken by registries or registrars. Is he accusing registries and registrars of doing something wrong here? It seems to me he's saying yes. When what we're talking about are policies that also bind registrants, who are the cyber squatters. Is he saying what? So I'm not sure what he's saying here, but it's something different, I think, than what we've been discussing. And anyway, he says the link between a report concerning abusive practices undertaken by certain registration authorities on one hand and a cyber squatting recommendation to investigate the current state of the UDRP on the other hand is on its face. It's on its face surprising. Rather, it might have been expected that any recommendation would have sought to address any registration authority conduct. that may tend to frustrate core UDRP principles and ICANN compliance conditions, particularly as UDRP panelists have found occasion to publicly discuss the various and unfortunately sometimes repetitive facets of these issues. So what he seems to be saying there is ICANN not taking care of registrars who are not executing UDRP decisions. I see Martin's hand.
Yeah, cheers, Greg. It was following on really from the previous discussions, but it was my regular gripe on this, and I look at WIPO's response here as highly defensive of UDRP, and I think it misses the point, which is we want to have a look at the UDRP and determine what gaps exist, because it is still relatively young as a policy, and it, whilst UDRP has its purpose, it tends to be for where there is a strong commitment on the registrant and the complainant to fight it out, whereas most of the domain name cyber squatting abuse never goes through UDRP. It's just far too expensive in terms of the volumes that are out there for any brand owner to contemplate, bar some that have deep pockets, presumably. So I think we've still got to look at this as, yes, they're very defensive of UDRP, but our actual recommendations is looking at the gaps of what is there beyond UDRP and what gaps exist in the current UDRP space. So just wanted to mention my normal gripe on that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Martin. Anyone else? Okay. If not, we'll continue on. The letter says that such practices seem to persist substantially informed the concept of the WIPO proposed post-delegation procedure for new GTLD registries. The concept appears equally appropriate vis-a-vis registrar conduct. Okay, so let me give you a little background about what that's about. There's a concept that is currently under discussion in the new GTLD process, and it's about, let's say ICANN gives a new TLD to an applicant. Then what happens if that applicant doesn't do what they said they would do with the TLD? And there could be various problems that come up. For example, the applicant loses its sponsorship from the appropriate community, or the registry says it's for one thing and it's for a certain use, and then does something completely different with it. People worried about, you know, applicants being dishonest, basically, about what they're going to do with the TLD or what it's for or what community is going to be allowed to do it. As an example, the Apple Growers Association getting a dot apple and then using it to market to Apple computer users or something like that. Now, one of the controversial things, I think, in that process is that WIPO has said that registries should be responsible for certain things. And there's going to be, there's some public comment happening on those topics right now. So I think what Mr. Wilbers is doing is he's saying he wants to loop all that into this conversation about UDRP. So that's pretty, I personally think, pretty complicated and wide-ranging. Any comments about that? Okay. So it says discussions occurring with, I'm sorry. He says, discussions occurring within the context of ICANN's new GTLD program would seem to already address the cyber squatting recommendation. I think that's a surprise to all of us because we've discussed that in depth over the months. Calls to investigate the UDRP may also be driven by the proposal for a new Uniform Rapid Suspension System, URS, occurring within the context of ICANN's new GTLD program. At its core, the URS is intended to interoperate with and complement the existing UDRP by seeking to deliver faster and cheaper results in appropriate cases. Whether the current URS proposal meets these objectives remains open. For example, further to our proposal of April 3, 2009, we note that removing the need for panel appointment in cases of respondent default in a URS proceeding where the envisioned remedy is a temporary suspension of an infringing domain name would exponentially decrease the cost and time attendant to such a procedure. With already adequate registrant notice and an appropriately crafted mechanism through which a defaulting respondent or unrelated third party could later establish their bona fides with respect to a suspended domain name, the benefits of a default-based filtering mechanism to all ICANN stakeholders would seem obvious. I'm not sure what a default-based filtering mechanism is.
Isn't it obvious?
Any comments? Wendy, what do you think that might refer to?
I'm not familiar with the WIPO proposal that he's referring to. I just find it hard to take this seriously. Do we think that others are taking it seriously enough that, I guess we do since we're spending so much time reading through it, but it seems so over the top.
Well, we're gonna read through the comments and then we'll have to decide whether we think it's serious or not. But
I mean, I know they make it seriously, but I find it hard to believe that anyone would read it and say we must jump.
Yeah. Well, let's continue. In the meantime, informed by the administration of some 17,000 UDRP related cases, WIPO will continue to upgrade its nonprofit public resources, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and UDRP case administration, blah, blah, blah. Boldface, rather than seeking to amend the time-tested UDRP, independent focus on meaningful complementary mechanisms may yield more practical results. Okay, so what they want is don't look at the UDRP, give us URS and the other things that have been proposed for new GTLD. Unclear whether they're requesting that specifically in all TLDs or just the new TLDs. As noted, rather than focusing efforts and processes unlikely to beget a progressive result, WIPO believes that the focus should be on development of rights protection mechanisms that truly add value for the prevention and resolution of disputes in a massively enlarged DNS. So on and so forth. The integrity of the UDRP depends on the providers ICANN chooses to accredit. Perceived UDRP issues tend not to be rooted in UDRP itself, but rather in its often profit-driven application by certain providers and their constituents. WIPO has publicly alerted ICANN to provider practices that may violate the letter or spirit of the UDRP. So that seems to be a swipe against WIPO's competitors, and then the letter ends. So, let's open this up for comment. What do people think of this letter? Are any of these comments valid? And if they are not, should we note why? Don't speak all at once. Okay, I think.
this is Mikey. I think I'll just sort of repeat what I said at the top. There's sort of a wide perception across the ICANN community that there are some folks who want to open up the UDRP process to fix it, and there are others who are quite adamant that by so doing, it may get terribly weakened and best just leave that ticking time bomb alone. And I think that this WIPO letter falls squarely in that latter category. I have more faith, I guess, in the ICANN process than they do. And so I just disagree with them.
Anyone else? I'll speak purely for myself. This is Greg. I think that, first of all, UDRP is ICANN's policy. It's not WIPO's. And WIPO is one of the parties who's been tasked with executing it. So they do have a defined role in the process. I think it's absolutely ICANN's right to examine its own policies on occasion and decide whether there should be changes or improvements. Some of the comments that we noted in our report were about the policy itself, and some of the comments were about the execution of the policy. Specifically the UDRP rules and how the dispute providers and their panelists, you know, carry things out. And I have to say that a lot of the comments and criticisms about uniformity and process have come from some of WIPO's own panelists. So I think what we're also getting into is a discussion of, well, the new rights protection mechanisms are in some way a supplement to or extension of UDRP. UDRP was originally the way you dealt with domain disputes. Now there are all these additional mechanisms being discussed, which basically do the same thing but in different situations or cases or flavors of disputes. So it seems disingenuous to me for WIPO to say, we don't want you to change UDRP, but we highly advocate you change UDRP in the following ways, which is use these other mechanisms. So I think there's an internal conflict there. Faisal?
Yeah, go back to what Martin said earlier. I think it's exactly right. I think that they're probably very, you know, the UDRP process can be pretty costly to brand holders, and there are probably some shortcomings. I think maybe taking this letter in the light most favorable to WIPO, I think perhaps what they might be saying is, look, let's open it up, go at the UDRP completely and go after everything. Maybe it has to be done on an ad hoc basis, and maybe there's certain ways of being able to pull in some of those or address some of those shortcomings within the UDRP itself by looking at certain processes. So, for example, maybe there's a way of being able to come up with a similar, and I'm just throwing this out, maybe a similar URS, but within the UDRP itself to be able to be more cost-effective for brand holders and maybe be more efficient in terms of time, because, you know, as it is, it's a pretty lengthy process. So I don't know. I to some extent, I would think that you know, throwing it wide open and saying, okay, everybody go at it, is probably not the right way to do it. And maybe what they're saying is, look, you know, there may be ad hoc ways of being able to do it so that we go after little pieces and still maintain the integrity of the system.
Thank you, Faisal. We, by the way, are coming up at the end of the meeting. It's almost 30 after. I think one of the questions we'll have to think about is whether we put anything in the report to specifically address WIPO's comments. They are a highly relevant party when we're talking about cyber squatting, certainly. I'm wondering if it may make some sense to address some of their questions, since one of their first questions is, why did you even talk about this issue? Why is the GNSO even, you know, looking at the issue? I think that might need to be addressed. All right, so we're at the end of the meeting, unfortunately. I think some of us might want to start drafting some text around this. Let's also see what other people say about the cyber squatting issue as we go through the comments. Next time, we will have to pick up the next public comment, which was from the registry stakeholder group, and we'll see, you know, how many more of these comments we can get through the registries, and then GoDaddy's comments are next. So we have a few action items from today. I'll write those up, send them out to the list. And does anybody have any parting thoughts, Barry?
Yeah, just a question. Can you remind me again? Our due date for all of this is, do we need to have the final report by our next meeting, or not our next meeting, but Brussels?
Yeah, you have to have papers in X days before Brussels. I calculated it. I'd have to go back into my notes here. It's we need to be done in late May, I think it is, or beginning of June. I'll go back.
Just Marika, the 31st of May would be the deadline if the document is to be reviewed at the Brussels meeting.
Yeah, and we need to have it done by then, so we need to keep a pretty decent clip and have that document finalized before the
Okay, so that basically gives us like five more RAP meetings, roughly?
Approximately, yes.
Okay, because I think we still have a fair amount of public comments to go. I'm concerned that we might run out of time. I don't know what other people's schedules are like, but, you know, if we can maybe move this to 2 hours, or I don't know, maybe meet twice a week or something, I guess it would be nice to see exactly kind of a final to-do list of everything we need to check off and make sure we get done to ensure that we've encapsulated the final report and we make that deadline.
Fair enough. Let me confirm the due date, the number of meetings we would have. I can only speak for myself, but I don't think I can do twice a week. But let's definitely work on a timeline that we're going to need to adhere to. And as individuals, we will certainly need to all hit our deadlines for whatever assignments we decide to take on. Because that deadline is going to be an absolute one for Brussels. So thanks, Barry, for bringing that up.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Let me send the notes out about that. I'll work on the timeline a bit, and then I'll send that to the list, and I'll appreciate comments that anybody has on that. And we'll talk about that at the top of the next meeting then. Okay. Well, thanks very much, guys, and as always, very thoughtful comments from everybody, and we'll reconvene at the same time next week.
Thanks,
Greg.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks, Greg.